This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. We're spending the hour today talking with local members of the LGBTQ community about life in 2021. Massachusetts has long centered the LGBTQ community. Nearly 20 years ago, we were the first state to legalize same-sex marriage. And Boston's yearly Pride celebration is the largest in New England. Still, in the last year, longtime internal rifts have boiled to the surface, while efforts to strip people who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, or queer of rights have swept across the country, including in New England, as you'll hear. So, as we take stock of living LGBTQ in 2021, we start by asking, where are we in policy with Boston Pride, in safety and recognition for the trans community, and what are the challenges ahead for creating a full, vibrant Commonwealth? Join us. Join the conversation. Are you LGBTQ? Are you an ally? What does it mean to live LGBTQ in 2021 in the Commonwealth? What policy challenges do you see, and what core questions must we struggle with as a Commonwealth? The number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join the conversation, or you can send us a tweet at Radio Boston. Starting us off, with me now to talk more about challenges, both past and present, within the LGBT community locally, Gary Daffin. He is the executive director of the Multicultural Aid Coalition and the co-chair of the Massachusetts Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus. Gary, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So what does it mean to be LGBTQ in this moment, in this community, Gary?
I think it feels different to different people. For those of us who have been working for decades trying to advance LGBTQ rights and seeing some of our successes, it looks good. It looks like we've been very successful. We've gotten to places we didn't think we would get to. For people who have grown up with some of those rights, they still see that there's a long way to go and that there's inequity, that LGBTQ people aren't treated equally around the country, that there are still challenges, health challenges, work challenges. So it depends on what perspective you have. And I think that's where we have conflict and where we have a challenge of figuring out sort of where does the movement, if you will, goes.
Let's stick with this concept of movement in both ways, you know, a movement and movement as in progress. You know, over the last 20 to 30 years, where would you say, how do I break this out? Okay, so it's sort of like three parts. Where would you say we have moved forward for the LGBTQ community? Where would you say we are now taking steps back? And where would you say we've failed to move forward as we should?
Well, we've clearly made enormous strides in terms of marriage equality, in terms of having the Supreme Court outlaw discrimination based on gender and sexual orientation. So we've gone quickly to a place where a large part of the country believes that LGBTQ people should be, you know, should have equal rights. Where we have trouble now is that has caused a big backlash, and that people who have seen technology and social, you know, the social world move so quickly, a lot of people in America feel as if, you know, they're stuck and the world's moving too fast. And I think that's why we see some of the backlash that we've seen in the past 4 years, particularly with the president, who was basically anti-gay, anti-trans. And I think we also, as a movement, we are facing the challenge of remembering that LGBTQ people are across all populations, rich, poor, black, white, brown. And the movement always has to look at what's needed now and who is it that's not partaking in all of the advances that we've had. And I think that's where we're seeing people stand up, which is great to see so many black and brown people standing up and saying, we want to focus on issues that affect us. So we haven't done a good job of moving to the point where we understand that our community lives in the intersections of many other communities. And so we've got to be involved in all of those issues as well, whether it's about poverty or reproductive rights or workers' rights. Those are all things that affect our people. And we I think in the beginning, those movements were with us. And now it's sort of switched a little bit. We've been somewhat successful, and we've got to remember that our people are part of those movements as well. It's not a surprise that three of the people who founded the Black Lives Matter movement are queer women. And that, you know, that represents a real leap in terms of where we're, you know, where we're allowed to be or where we've stake the claim, but I think in our community, we've really got to figure out what does this mean for us and how do we change and how do we understand that intersectionality is a part of us as well.
Let me turn to you, listeners, for a moment and ask you, where do you see progress and where do you hunger for progress? 1-800-423-8255 is the number. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also tweet us at Radio Boston. There's a lot there, Gary. I want to pull some pieces apart, and I'll stick with the movement as a formal movement now. And I want to talk about pride a little bit. There have been deep rifts, especially in the last 12 months. Now, there's long been a conflict within Boston Pride over inclusivity, but that came to a head last summer over a statement that the board issued on the police killing of George Floyd. It was not the statement originally submitted to the board for a vote. How would you describe what happened then and in the aftermath?
Well, I wasn't a part of it at all. So I came to it late in the game. I came to it after the second statement had been released. And I read it, and I have to say my jaw kind of dropped when I read that there had been a process because it was clearly a mistake. They didn't quite meet the moment. I think when we talk about intersectionality, that was a good example of how the leaders of Pride were not attuned to what was happening in the community. They must have known what was happening in the broader country, the racial reckoning, if you will. And I think it was a mistake that just reverberated, and people felt that there was not sympathy and there was not an understanding at Pride of who we are. And I think that's what caused the rift. And it's not unlike lots of other institutions, lots of other organizations, lots of other prides. It's not only happening in Boston, it's happening everywhere. And that's a good thing. People are being, held accountable to, if you're going to represent the community, you've got to A, know who the community is, and B, make sure that representation is not just in committees or in, on paper. It has to be in the leadership and in the core of the organization.
It was a whiteboard. Black and trans activists began calling for diversification of that board, have been holding separate events, have been calling on Pride members to step down. Earlier this summer, the head of Boston Pride, Linda DeMarco, said she will step down this summer. The committee has pledged to diversify their ranks, but it hasn't happened over the last year. Will those pledges be enough? What other changes would need to happen?
Well, I think there's a discussion about Boston Pride, the corporation, and there's a discussion about the community. And I think the board can make changes to their bylaws and changes to how they operate. But I think the real discussion is, what does the community need? And what I would suggest they do is to really start a process that involves the community and engages the community in determining what is needed. And what do people want Pride to be? Is it just a party, or is it both a celebration and both a place where we highlight all the communities? It's not new that there are Black and Brown people who are having Pride celebrations. That's been going on for the past 20 years. There was Black Pride, Unity Pride, New England Black Pride. And it always struck me that it was unfortunate that they were not a part of the broader celebration. And I think the Pride Committee tried to, have some smaller groups, events. But it highlighted the point that Black and Brown people should not be an afterthought. And to have an all-white board in 2021, I mean, is this a country club in Georgia? It doesn't make any sense. And I think that's the thing that really upsets people, is if you don't have the wherewithal, you don't have the presence of mind to understand that you have a white board, an all-white board. And I know some of these folks, and I don't think that they're at all ill-intentioned, but this is what not recognizing white supremacy does. You're blind to things that you ought to be seeing because they're right in front of you. So it certainly doesn't engender faith in the organization. I think they're trying to make some good steps, but I think it's a first step. And I don't think it's going to go far enough until there is a much broader and deeper conversation with the community about what do people want Pride to be now? What should it be? And who needs to be leading it?
I want to go to the phones here, Gary. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join our conversation this hour. Pat is on the line from Framingham. Pat's pronouns are they, them. Pat, go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for doing all of your work, Tiziana. I love your show.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So basically, I just wanted to say that being non-binary myself and then, you know, being close to a lot of trans people, getting misgendered is very dysphoric. And the bureaucracy around changing your pronouns in the state is really complex. It takes like 9 months to do, and you have to get things notarized. And it's that's something that I'd like to see that, like, organizationally, I think the state could change.
Pat, thanks for that call. And Gary, Pat's raising the way bureaucracy enforces, right, and limits and slows and drags. And what should those priorities, those policy priorities be today in 2021?
Well, I think certainly we recognize that addressing policies that affect transgender folks is really important and really hard to do. We have in Massachusetts, I think we have a fairly good history of addressing other policies, but I think there are issues that affect parts of the community. So if people are not able to have housing, if people don't have health insurance or have access to health insurance or have some of the basic needs met, that's going to affect LGBTQ people as much or more than anyone else. And so I think that's why we see Black and Brown folks saying, yeah, it's great to have marriage rights, and it's great to not be fired from your job. But if you're a Black trans woman, you're not going to get a job because employers are going to not want to hire you. So I think we need to, I don't think we can just sort of make broad statements about what policy changes need to happen. I think those will come up, and they may be on an individual basis, and there may be some broad things that we do. But I think we've been addressing bigger policy issues as they arise. But there may be other issues like reproductive rights that affect parts of our community that we don't think about. So we need to be working with those, with the reproductive rights community around choice, or again, around labor rights, around making sure that people have fair housing. I think to a certain extent, we have to make sure that every policy, every area of policy takes a look at whether or not it is treating LGBTQ people equitably. So I don't know that there's an individual list that I have, but I think it's sort of a broad, making sure that, every part of the state or the city or towns, that their policies are thinking about recognizing that there are LGBTQ people and how do their policies affect those folks in their area.
So, we've had a number of conversations on the air lately where guests have called us all to remember the roots of the Pride movement, the roots of gay resistance, the roots of Stonewall in 1969, the importance of not forgetting that history. And you're talking now about a set of issues that, and you were very careful to say there is no one laundry list, but you also raised a set of issues that are fundamental to vulnerable and marginalized populations like housing and employment. Will there be, are there generational differences within the LGBTQ community about focus? And what of this call to go back to the roots of Stonewall?
Well, there are certainly generational differences, both, like I said, some people of a certain age, we've gotten to places where people never thought we would get. We didn't think we would have marriage in our lifetime. We certainly didn't think that the Supreme Court would be on our side ever. But there's always been a tension about what should be the focus, who should be the people leading, and what should be the strategies. And I don't see today as that much different from 50 years ago. I mean, we're seeing people who have urgent need standing up and saying, we've got to change this. We've got to be recognized. We've got to sort of talk about the things that are affecting our lives. That's what the movement is about. And in the past, people would be upset if we had dykes on bikes or men in leather or transgender folks leading the parade. Some people wanted to have just respectability politics and only put the people in the suits and dresses out front. And we've come a long way from there, mostly, but I think there is still some of that around. I think race plays such an important part in our country's history and our present that we can't forget that the LGBTQ community is a part of America. And so all of those issues are also part of the challenges that we have to face. And we have to look within our own community and figure out how are we not addressing the issues that our people, our Black and brown and trans and disabled queer people need to be addressed. And, you know, the people who are most advantaged are the people who in some ways least need the benefits that we try to fight for. If you own your own house, you don't really worry about getting kicked out because you're gay, because you own it. If you, back before we had marriage, people could, who had money, could draft their own domestic partnership policies and legal options, but other people didn't have that. So we've always got to be, the movement has to be figuring out who needs the most advocacy, where should we be focusing to make sure that all of our people are being treated well.
That's Gary Daffin, Executive Director of the Multicultural Aid Coalition and co-chair of the Massachusetts Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus. Gary, thanks so much.
Thank you.